It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Food Friday, let's have a picnic. A Wisconsin food blogger has advice and recipes, and you could share your outdoor dining favorites. First, what if I told you there was a pill that could boost your mental and physical health and actually add to your lifespan and your quality of life? No side effects, no copays. Sound pretty good? Okay, add this in. It's not a pill. The secret remedy is helping other people, loved ones, total strangers, anybody in between. Our next guest says it works, and there's science to back it up. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you spend time helping others in one way or another? Maybe it's volunteering, caring for a loved one, whatever. Do you find that you feel, in some way, shape, or form, better when you do it? If you volunteer your time, do you like to come back for more? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Stephen Treziak is a physician scientist, chief of medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, and professor and chair of medicine at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University in Camden, New Jersey. He's co-author of the book Compassionomics, the Revolutionary Scientific Evidence That Caring Makes a Difference. He's co-author of the new book Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others Is the Best Medicine for Yourself. He's, by the way, from Madison, graduate of Madison West High School and UW-Madison Medical School. Dr. Treziak, welcome to the show and welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
You start your book with a conversation about, I think, the ways we try to find happiness and self-improvement in American culture, and whether that's, you know, trying to be successful at work or famous or physically fit or meditating in a yurt, whatever. They all look really different, but they all center around me. Why do you see that as a big problem?
Well, Rob, the evidence shows that, in contrast to what we're perhaps taught to believe, that if we're successful, then we'll be happy. The evidence actually points the other direction. If we're happy, then we'll be successful. And as it relates to our physical health, there is abundant scientific evidence. My colleague and co-author, Dr. Anthony Mazzarelli, and I curated 250 original science peer-reviewed research studies and synthesize them in our new book to show the evidence that serving others is the best medicine for yourself, not just your physical health, but also your mental health, your happiness and well-being, and as I mentioned, even your professional success. So what the science supports is that rather than going deeper into ourselves, which some of the self-help or the me time proponents suggest, really to get out of our own head and to focus on others and serve other people is the best way to achieve all these outcomes that we want for ourselves in terms of health and well-being.
Yeah, the most surprising thing for me was the physical health benefit. I like it kind of makes sense. Helping others might boost my mental health, might make me feel happy. Can you connect the dots? Serving others makes us just straight up physically healthier.
Totally. And connecting the dots is really important because I wouldn't want any of your listeners to think that I'm talking about some sort of magic trick. So there are scientific mechanisms behind serving others. Real quickly, I'll go through them. Number one is it activates the reward center of the brain as shown on functional MRI brain scans. So as opposed to activating the pain center of your brain is when you see somebody struggling or suffering, and we all know experientially that's very difficult to watch. It actually activates the pain center of your brain. But when you take action to alleviate someone's pain or suffering, or you just do a kind act for another person, it triggers a distinct neural structure seen on these brain scans. It triggers a reward center. And that's part of the reason why, again, we know experientially, it feels good to help people. But there are other mechanisms. So we call them the Fantastic Four, and your listeners may be familiar with them. So endorphins and dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin, these hormones and neurotransmitters that are a big part of why it feels good to help people. But serving others also fine-tunes the nervous system. So as opposed to the fight or flight stress response that we may be used to, it pushes our nervous system to what's called the parasympathetic part of the nervous system, which is associated with calm and relaxation. It's essentially the chill part of the nervous system. And so it tips our nervous system in a more favorable direction. But the way all these things culminate is really twofold. Number one is it not only buffers our stress, so reduces the stress that we feel, not only in the moment, but it also, serving others also buffers the effect of chronic stress on health. And most of us are familiar with some data that stress, chronic stress, can have many health effects. Well, serving others actually buffers those risks. And lastly, chronic systemic inflammation in the body is something that's associated with all kinds of bad things like heart disease as well as cancer. And what research has shown is that serving others actually can switch off the genes in such a way to reduce the production of chronic systemic inflammation. So it's not a magic trick, as I said. There are actually bona fide, well-documented scientific mechanisms that are causing all the benefits for yourself that we talk about in Wonder Drug.
We're talking to Dr. Stephen Treziak, co-author of the new book, Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Seymour. Tom, hello.
I'm just wondering, I know a lot of addicts and alcoholics, and the ones that seem most comfortable with themselves and their sobriety are the ones that get outside themselves and help other people. Have you looked at service to others as a mechanism to help get away from these addictions?
Tom, thanks for that call. Dr. Treziak, Tom is right on target. You write specifically about that in the book.
Tom, it's a great question. And folks in the recovery community know about the importance of serving others. And one thing I have to say is that I am not an expert in addiction medicine, but as Rob mentioned, we do cover this to some extent in the book. And as we understand the 12-step process, the first 11 steps are focused to some extent on ourselves, but the key 12th step is to look outside of ourselves and commit to helping another person struggling with the addiction. So again, I don't have training or background in addiction medicine specifically, but I do want to share that there is evidence that turning our attention light around from ourselves and our own problems, focusing it on someone else, that can be an important, crucial step in taking steps towards recovery. So thanks for the question, Tom.
Tom, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. You look a lot in the book at how to do this, how to get into helping other people. And I think a key point is it's not necessarily that productive to go all the way and stop caring about ourselves and devote our lives wholly to helping other people. It seems like that's not sustainable. What did you find?
So yes, we do write a 7-step evidence-based prescription, meaning lots of research studies to back up the different steps in the prescription. But underlying all that is exactly what you mentioned, is we have to recognize that research also shows that being self-focused and being other-focused are not two extremes on one single continuum. What researchers have shown is that there are actually 2 independent axes, meaning you can be high or low on both. So if you're high on self-interest and low on other interest, then we call that person an egomaniac. If you're low on other interest and on self-interest, then you're just apathetic and perhaps a slug of sorts. If you are high on other interests, but low on other interests, you might let people walk all over you. And that's why Dr. Maz and I refer to those people as doormats. What's key and what we call a live to giver, and that's somebody who recognizes, and you may know people like this, Rob, in your life, that they know that serving other people is really what gives them their joy, their happiness, as well as a plethora of other effects. Those people are high on other interest, but they can also be high on self-interest in the way that they know it's good for them and it makes them happy. And that's okay. If you realize that you realize there's evidence behind it, what the research shows is it actually doesn't ruin the effect. But what it does is it helps set some sort of boundaries. And that prevents people from becoming doormats and letting people walk all over them, because that's not sustainable. But being high in other interest and self-interest is what makes it sustainable, so that we can be the best live to giver that we can over a lifetime.
We're talking to Dr. Stephen Treziak, co-author of the new book, Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you, in some way, Live to Give? Do you like to help other people, serve other people, maybe volunteer your time, your talent? How do you feel when you do it? What questions do you have for our guest about how this affects our physical health, our emotional health, our happiness? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Dr. Stephen Treziak, Chief of Medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, co-author of the new book, Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you find happiness, maybe even healthiness, when you help other people in some way, big or small? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Carmen is with us in Twin Lakes. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. It is unbelievable to me that more people aren't willing to help other people. My situation was, since earlier middle grade school, helping my family and father in a small business, and that extended to aunts and uncles and cousins and relatives. And it seems so terrible when it's more people don't do it. And then after decades of helping, I think my sister has something like narcissistic personality disorder. She convinced my mother to change to Trush when my mother was, I don't know, 93 or something like that, and my sister put her in a home, even though my mother said, I want to die in my home. And my mother used to say to me, Carmen, how can I ever repay you for everything you've done for me and my family? I can't do it without, I got nothing. I'm okay. I got nothing financial. I got feelings. I know the difference between right and wrong.
Carmen, I got you. Sorry, it took a bad twist for you there. But even with the bad scene there, Dr. Treziak, Carmen seems proud of the way he's helped people through the years.
Well, not only should Carmen be proud of that, but he should also realize that it might give him more of what we all want, which is time. Because this book is not this book Wonder Drug, it's not a Pollyanna do-gooder book, it's a science book. And what the science supports is that on average, those people who help and serve others, not in a one-and-done sort of fashion, but consistently over time, they actually have greater longevity. It lowers more, it's independently associated with a lower mortality risk. And that's when you factor in all sorts of other things like socioeconomic status and comorbid health conditions, that giving and serving can be a powerful benefit for health and specifically longevity.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's get into the 7-part prescription here. And part one, it really is easy to start small. I think an average of, 16 minutes a day you talked about in the book?
So start small is one of the most important parts of the 7-part prescription, because the barrier to entry is so small, but it's seismic. And so you don't have to have a total life upheaval to start serving others. You don't need to quit your job and sell all your worldly possessions and move to a third world country and start hauling water from a distant well. Now, on the contrary, what we need to do is not change our surroundings, but just change how we interact with our surroundings. So just simple prism changes where we see those people who are routinely in our orbit, the people under our own roof, or the people who we work with every day, those people that we can help and serve in some act of kindness, those are the little things that add up. And what the research supports is that it's just, on average, 16 minutes per day of service to others that will give us the benefits as it relates to longevity. So you may want to do it 16, we call it the daily 16, Dr. Maz and I. You may want to do it every day, or you may want to chunk it up and do it on a Saturday morning and serve 2 hours to help a sick friend or relative or serve a good cause or organization. But the research shows that you don't need a total life upheaval.
One thing I thought was interesting is you talk about effective ways to ask people if they need some kind of help. So we're in Wisconsin. If I say, how are you? You say, fine. If I say, do you need help? You say, nah, I'm good. I don't want to be a bother. What is a more effective way to suss out if somebody needs some kind of help, and if so, what?
It's a great question, Rob, and what research supports is that in everyday life, regular people have 9 opportunities for empathy every day. And I'm just a work in progress. And so that is very helpful to me because, you know, I think about how many opportunities for empathy did I miss even just this morning? And so looking for those opportunities is important rather than face buried in our phone and just in our own little world. We need to not only make eye contact with people, but we need to ask the right questions. So in contrast to the questions like, can I help you? Do you need any help? Which sort of invites a, no, I'm good. I'm fine. I don't need anything. Ask a question that can't be answered with a yes or a no. So for example, what can I do to make your day better today? Or what are the ways that I can be helpful to you today? In that case, you're likely to get something that you can act upon. And what the research supports is that it's not only good for the person that you're helping and serving, it's also good for you, and it'll make your own day better at the same time.
Talking to Dr. Stephen Treziak. He's a physician and a scientist, chief of medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, co-author of the book we're talking about, Wonder Drug, 7 scientifically proven ways that serving others is the best medicine for yourself. Dr. Treziak, do motives matter if I'm doing a good thing because I want people to see me doing a good thing? Does that work the same or different than if I'm doing it just to try to help people?
If you're doing it for strategic reasons, so in contrast to what Dr. Maz and I call a live to giver, instead, if you're a give to getter, meaning you're serving somebody because it's not only going to make you look good, but maybe in order to get something in return in like some sort of reciprocity, research shows quite clearly, you might as well forget it. It just doesn't work. So not only is it, does it not have the same links to the, to true, shall we say, altruistic motives. But what research shows in functional MRI brain scans, it actually activates a different part of your brain when you're serving others for strategic reasons or because somebody made you do it as some sort of an assignment versus doing it because you want to. And it's the doing it because you want to. Those are the types of serving others that will give you all the mechanisms that I talked about in the first segment, as well as all the outcomes that we've been talking about now, and not just longevity, but even things like lowering blood pressure over time.
Interesting thing, early in the book, you go back to Charles Darwin and ideas about evolution. And, you know, some people might think, oh, wait, the selflessness seems unnatural. We're evolved to take care of ourselves, right? Well, no, even Charles Darwin was saying, we help each other, and that's what we've evolved to do. This is part of our nature, this selflessness, this giving.
It is. Charles Darwin has been credited with a lot of things that he didn't do. One of them is coining the term survival of the fittest. It was actually a colleague of his that coined that term. But what Darwin did write is that the communities that help and serve each other, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but the communities that help and serve each other are those most likely to go on and to be preserved. And so in Darwin's writings, if you look at the detail, he clearly understood the importance of helping and serving and taking good care of each other because it was good for the species.
Can you talk about the notion of widening our orbit was the word you used earlier. So right off the bat, we can put this into practice maybe with a spouse or a family member, but then maybe a friend and a coworker. How can we expand the circle of people we look to provide help for?
Well, one of the best ways, and this is tough right now because it seems at least to me that sometimes we're more divided than ever before. And if we have what some scientists call parochial empathy, meaning take care of our own, give and serve to our own, but not the other, meaning those people over there, you know, the quote unquote out group, as researchers study it, and only take care of our in group, that cuts us off to a ton of opportunities to help and serve other people. So what the research supports is that let's just be honest. If we held everybody up to some sort of purity test to only help and serve the people who believe exactly what we believe, we'd basically be able to help and serve nobody. and so what the science supports is that not only empathy matters, but reaching out and helping and serving people that maybe have different views than we do. And that is really where we're going to pick up a lot of the opportunities to expand that orbit, so to speak.
I want to close in just our last minute by touching on one more of your 7 points that we could put into practice pretty quickly, I think, being thankful. Can you leave us with a thought on that?
Sure. You've probably heard the evidence that an attitude of gratitude is good for you, but why? And that's what Dr. Maz and I wanted to dive into. And what we found is that in a meta-analytic study, meaning pushing all the evidence available everywhere in the scientific literature together, what the researchers found is that that attitude of gratitude and being thankful actually tips us over towards serving others and being focused on others rather than just being focused on ourselves. So really what the mechanism is that being thankful opens our mind to opportunities to help and serve other people. And then when we follow through on it, we can get all the benefits.
That's a great place to leave it, Dr. Treziak. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And I wish I could join your listeners on the Union Terrace tonight, but I'll have to do it some other time.
The weather's great, not to rub it in, but thanks again. That's Dr. Stephen Treziak, physician scientist, chief of medicine at Cooper University Healthcare, and professor and chair of medicine at Cooper Medical School at Rowan University. He's co-author of the book we've been talking about. It's called Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others is the Best Medicine for Yourself. Coming up after the news, July is National Picnic Month, naturally. A Wisconsin food blogger joins us on Food Friday to share favorite outdoor summer recipes for your next picnic. You could join in with your favorites, too, right now on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a few minutes, it's this week's edition of Food Friday with a focus on picnics. You can get us started right now. What is your favorite thing, food, to bring to a picnic? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. First, the Republicans running for governor in 2022 have spent a lot of time talking about the election of 2020. It's especially true for Tim Ramthan, the state representative who made a name for himself by calling on lawmakers to revoke President Joe Biden's victory. WPR's Sean Johnson reports.
Less than a month before the Republican primary for governor, several poster boards are displayed on either side of a lectern in the Wisconsin Assembly's ornate parlor. They're there for the press conference called by Tim Ramthan, the Republican candidate for governor. One is a map showing which county Republican parties have called for a full forensic, physical, and cyber audit of the 2020 election. Another is a bulleted list describing Wisconsin's electronic voter database. At the bottom are several post-it notes with handwritten numbers. Ramthan, a Republican state representative from Campbellsport, is talking about the state Supreme Court's recent ruling that held absentee ballot drop boxes are illegal in Wisconsin. He mischaracterizes the ruling and goes well beyond what the court actually said.
When the ballot drop boxes were used illegally, anything and all things that went into them made them null and void the moment they went into the box. So
what Ramthan is advocating would be an extreme step for Wisconsin and American democracy. He wants the Wisconsin legislature to vote to decertify President Joe Biden's victory in Wisconsin, a move election law experts, including the legislature's nonpartisan attorneys, say is impossible.
My focus has been since day one, transparency and truth. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I am not. How can you ignore this when you're supposed to be serving the public and not try to do something about it? That's what I've embraced. I'm a servant of the people.
When Ramthan speaks, some of his supporters in the crowd literally answer, Amen. Ramthenbacker Sana Hipschman of Chilton says he works for people like her.
And that's why I will do whatever I can to help him. I know he's not given a lot of money. I know he has to work against his own party for me. And if someone's going to do that for me, then I'm going to be there for them.
Ramthan has a passionate following among Republicans for whom election denial is their number one issue. He's been endorsed by former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy.
And I will tell you, I'll just put it right out there. I'm endorsing. He will be the best governor your country or your state ever had in history.
The most prominent Republican calling for the 2020 election to be overturned, former President Donald Trump, also said nice things about Ramthan. But he stopped short of a formal endorsement, giving the nod to construction executive Tim Michaels instead. And while Ramthan's supporters are vocal, they appear to be a relatively small group. A recent survey of GOP voters by Marquette University found just 3% favored Ramthan. Most voters said they preferred Michaels or former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish. But UCLA professor Rick Hassan, an election law expert, says it would be a mistake to assume that Ramthan's message is harmless.
And just having this discussion in a gubernatorial race, as you have in Wisconsin, I think elevates the claims.
Hassan says what Ramthan's asking for, decertification, has no basis in the law. Biden's victory in Wisconsin was affirmed by a statewide canvass, a partial recount, and multiple state and federal court decisions. Optimistically, Hassan says, the push to overturn the 2020 election is just cheap talk, a way to placate the base and Trump.
Less optimistically, I think that there's a movement to try to not only make voting harder, which is something that we've seen in the last few decades on the Republican side, but also to potentially provide a pathway to overturning election results.
There's a chance Ramthan's presence in the GOP primary, or at least his message, has affected the race. Neither Clayfish nor Michaels will commit to certifying the 2024 presidential election if they're elected governor. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can read more profiles of the candidates for governor at WPR.org. With great weather in Wisconsin, what better way to eat a meal than outside in nature, or at least on the lawn? It's Food Friday. This week, we're talking all about picnic food, how to pack, what makes good picnic food, and some recipes along the way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of picnics when the weather's nice, or maybe even not quite as nice? What are your favorite recipes to bring along to serve up when you're eating at the park, in the backyard, wherever you have your picnics? In fact, what is your favorite picnic spot? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ashley Lecker runs the Wisconsin food blog Cheese Curd in Paradise. She's the author of the Serial Killer Cookbook. Ashley, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Are you a fan of picnics yourself? I know you're a fan of food. Do you like to eat it outside?
Yeah, I have two little kids, so picnicking, eating outside is a part of the, you know, kind of part of the summer package with them. And so it's something that we enjoy, and it's a great way to make things at home that you bring, or even bring some, or, you know, stop somewhere and just enjoy eating the meal outside, enjoying the nice weather while we have it.
Now, you've got some fun recipes for us that we'll get into that kind of up our picnic game. But in general, are there like, when you're thinking, okay, I'm making food to serve, you know, on a tarp outside as opposed to on the kitchen table, where does your mind start to go?
Yes, I definitely think differently because I try to think of things that can eat with my hands or things that are easy and portable that I don't necessarily have to assemble at the place that we're eating, that I can do the work in advance so that we, when we get there, we can, you know, spread out our blanket and we can enjoy the food.
Now, one of my oversights, I think, when I do an outdoor thing is the beverage. And that's where you start us off. You know, I think, oh, we'll bring water, you know, maybe cans of soda, real creative. No, you've got watermelon, lime, agua fresca. Tell us what goes into making this.
Yes, this is one of my favorite things to make in the summer. It is really, really easy. And I like to make mine with watermelon because that's one of my favorite summer fruits. And with agua fresca, really what it is it's water with some kind of sweet, like a melon, like a, and then a little bit of sugar and typically lime. And you blend it, and then it's simply just strained. And you can put it in a container, serve it chilled, serve it on ice. If you are having a little more of a fun type of picnic, you could put a little alcohol in there. And but it's really delicious and really refreshing.
I've got that recipe up at wpr.org/foodfriday. You mentioned watermelon's your favorite variation. What are some other ones that you like?
Oh, I love, also love to use like cantaloupe or even like a honeydew melon. The one thing about those, you know, or watermelon too, in that case, make sure it's really nice and ripe because you're going to get the best, you know, the sweet flavor and more the riper the fruit, you have more of that juice and liquid that will go into your drink.
And what do you do to transport that? Just like a good big, I guess, jug that isn't going to spill in the cooler on the way over.
Yeah, something that is seals well because it is juice and so it gets sticky and kind of if it spills, you don't want that. So something with a good seal on it that you can bring. They have those kind of cooler jugs that have the spout on them that you can just pour right from those, and those are great to use as well for transporting.
Now, I'm a big fan of a pasta salad, a potato salad, that kind of thing in a picnic. I don't mind, you know, having, you know, plates and silverware. It doesn't have to all be finger food. You've given us a pesto caprese pasta. So the steaks, obviously, you're not going to cook it on site. You do it in advance. It's a cold pasta salad, though, perfect for a picnic. Tell us about this dish a little bit.
This is one of my favorite pasta salads. I love pesto, and pesto just screams summer to me, right? When we have all that fresh basil, and then we have all of that, and then just the, you know, seasonal tomatoes, mozzarella, and it's one of my very, very, very favorites. So with this one, it's really quite simple. It's I use a shaped pasta just because I think it catches the sauce really nicely with inside the pasta, and it's fresh tomatoes and fresh mozzarella, pesto, and a little bit of mayo. And so it's a creamy. Now, if you are not a person who likes mayonnaise so much and don't prefer a creamy sauce to your pasta salad, you could leave that out and just add a little bit more pesto, and it would still work beautifully.
And pesto, we were talking about this on the show a couple weeks back. You know, your basic pesto recipes like basil and pine nuts and the garlic and olive oil and so on. You can do a lot of variations on it, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I have had pesto that's made with like the tops of carrot tops even, or some people will use cashews or almond as their the kind of nut base instead of the pine nuts. So you can really play with it and use whatever kind of flavors that work best for you. I love basil, so it's hard for me to stray away from that, but there's a lot of different variations. You could even use garlic scapes if you would like to, which is that green kind of top part of the plant that grows out of the garlic heads, and that also works.
We're talking to Wisconsin food blogger Ashley Lecker, creator of the site Cheese Curd in Paradise. She's with us today for Food Friday for Summer Picnics 101, breaking down what makes good picnic food, sharing some recipes she loves. You can find that pasta salad, that pesto pasta salad we were just talking about, that agua fresca, and more at wpr.org/foodfriday. And you can join in now at 800-642-1234. Have you always been a fan of picnics, of eating outside? Have you done it more maybe during the pandemic? It turned into a go-to get-together with friends or family. What is your favorite kind of picnic site? The yard, a park, you name it. And of course, what kind of foods have to be at your picnic? Call in with your thoughts, your favorites, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Ashley Lecker from the Wisconsin food blog, Cheese Curd in Paradise. She's with us today to give us tips for our next summer picnic. We've got some recipes from Ashley at wpr.org/foodfriday. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your picnic favorites, maybe your advice for others, a picnic fail, or a question for our guest, 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Ashley, you mentioned earlier picnicking with your kids. Do you have thoughts? What are some of the big success stories for kid food at a picnic?
Oh, I think the biggest success for kids at the picnic is as long as you have a nice treat to have at the end. I know mine love dessert. And so they are always very curious what the treat is going to be at the end of our meal.
And what is it? What's the treat at the end?
So my favorite, one of my favorite things to bring is that these are really easy. I have a recipe for brownie muffins, and they are, instead of having, you know, big pan of muffins, which works great, of brownies, I mean, which works fine. But these are individual ones. So you can put them in a sealable bag, you can transport them, and it makes things quite easy. And so it's just a very traditional brownie recipe that I make in muffin tins. I also add some mini chocolate chips because I love to have a few chocolate chips inside of my brownies.
You can join in this Food Friday conversation at 800-642-1234 as we talk about picnics. Now, we've got a caller here at 800-642-1234. Bev is with us in Pewaukee. Bev, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead,
Bev. One of my favorite things to take for just a little side is stringless sweet pea pods.
Oh, great. That's easy to transport, nice and crunchy. Bev, thanks a lot for that. Yeah, something as simple as, chopped up veggies, raw veggies, can be a great picnic side dish. What do you think, Ashley?
I think that is fantastic. And my kiddos are also, and me, are also a big fan of those as well.
Thanks a lot for that call, Bev, at 800-642-1234. Okay, let's get a little more ambitious now. You shared a main dish. It sounds ambitious to me. Shrimp ceviche. Now, I've had that in restaurants where they know what they're doing. This is with pickled onion. Tell us a little bit about this. Is it easier than I think to make?
It is. It is one of those dishes that don't be intimidated by it because it is very easy to put together. Ceviche is a preparation style that essentially cooks your fish or seafood in acidic citrus. And the acidic citrus cures the protein and it cooks it. So if you use something like shrimp, which is kind of that gray color when it starts, you will watch it become pink as the citrus gets its way into the shrimp. So one of my favorite ways is to use shrimp and also pickled onions and then some tomatoes, avocado, fresh cilantro, and lime juice and a little bit of jalapeno. And it travels really well. You can put it on ice and then serve it with some tortilla chips while you're picnicking outside. And it's delicious and it's perfect if it's hot outside as well.
We're talking to Ashley Lecker, creator of the Wisconsin food blog Cheese Curd in Paradise, getting some Food Friday advice on picnics. Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in La Crosse. Chris, hello.
Yeah, hi. I was commenting with the screener there that I lived in Germany for a while in the Frankfurt area, and whenever you ate anything that tasted good, the word you used was Lecker. So I found it kind of fun and ironic that you're making all these wonderful things and your last name in German was yummy.
Look, Chris, I dimly remember that from my German classes X number of years ago. Ashley, I'm guessing you probably knew this already.
I did. My husband is sometimes on the route for like different signs like in German that say that on it, but I did know that and I enjoy the irony of it as well.
Chris, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Now, getting back to a little ambition here in our prep, you've got a homemade bread you like to make and then bring along for picnics for maybe sandwiches or a cheese board or something like this. A 4-ingredient, no need crusty bread. That does sound good for a picnic. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, this is a bread where it's all-purpose flour, salt, active dry yeast, and warm water. And it bakes in a Dutch oven. And it is one of the simplest recipes that I make. And what comes out is this beautiful, crusty, round loaf of bread that's perfect for sandwiches or if you're doing a charcuterie or just some meat and cheese or spreads of some kind, of maybe just some bread and butter. Like that's, who doesn't love that? And so it's fantastic to bring on a picnic.
Now, bread, great for sandwiches, of course. The Central Time team getting hungry, hearing you talk about these recipes. Dean Canetta, our executive producer, says he likes at picnics fancy Italian sandwiches, maybe on a baguette that doesn't get too soggy. And then we heard on Facebook from Jacqueline, who says chipped ham sammies and potato salad. Do you have thoughts on sandwiches for a picnic? Now, I've done this with homemade sandwiches or store-bought sandwiches, and you know, half hour in, they're a little on the soggy side. You could still eat them, but it's not, you know, primo sandwich experience. Any thoughts on non-soggy sandwichification at our picnics?
Yeah, the sandwiches are fantastic for picnics. And what I like to do with my sandwiches, if we are bringing them on a picnic, is I like to add like any condiments, like whether that be an oil and vinegar or mayo, mustard. I like to add it right before we eat. And sometimes I'll even keep the tomatoes separate and I'll add those right before we eat as well, because that can help keep your sandwich not as soggy, just because those ingredients have a little more moisture in them and it can get into your bread. And if it sits a little bit, then you have some soggy bread. But keeping those separate and just kind of getting them all prepped in advance, but putting them on right before you eat will keep your bread not soggy and nice and crisp.
Excellent. Now, Lauren Cox, one of our producers, mentions his friend made an incredible corn dip that we brought to a brewer's tailgate this week. More of a parking lot picnic than a traditional one. I think tailgates counts as a picnic. That's fine, Lauren. Dips are a big feature, I think, maybe for those cold vegetables or for chips or whatever. Do you have any favorite picnic dips?
Yes, I really love just a fresh salsa, or I live in Wisconsin. I love beer dip with pretzels. Those are some of my favorites as well. And I think the corn dip that I have had someone make that at a potluck I went to once, if it's the creamy corn dip I'm thinking of, and it was delicious.
Excellent. Now, do you, like, are you hardcore enough in a picnic where you have like special gear and like all sorts of coolers and things like that? Or do you get by with just some of the basics? What are your favorite things to have to make that picnic logistically simpler?
I do not have anything too technical. We have a cooler that's on wheels and a blanket and like a drink cooler type of thing. And that's kind of what we do. I think what's also important, make sure bring paper towels with you, cut your stuff in advance, use sealable bags. Those are all things that will make your life much easier on the picnic. Cause it is kind of hard to like cut bread, meat or cheese on a cutting board on like a picnic blanket. So cutting some of that stuff in advance will save you time once you get there.
Okay, now here's a weird crossover with your other specialty here. You wrote a cookbook made up of serial killers' last meal requests. You want to talk about one of the recipes today. It's a classic picnic food for a lot of people. Classic picnic food, fried chicken. But it was John Wayne Gacy's last meal. Tell us about this fried chicken, please.
So, yes, I wrote this book. It came out in 2020, and it was a lot of fun to write. But one of the last meals I talk about is John Wayne Gacy. And his last meal consisted of fried chicken. He owned a couple KFCs, and he had a dozen deep fried shrimp, KFC, French fries, a pound of strawberries, and a bottle of Diet Coke was his last meal. So I have a recipe for a crispy fried chicken in the book. And fried chicken is like the quintessential picnic food, right? That's everyone thinks of that. And so I have my version of fried chicken. And it's pretty simple. It has like, you know, the basic ingredients of flour, use cornstarch to get that really crisp chicken. But my secret to really crispy chicken is to actually use vodka in one of the parts of it. That it boils a little bit more bubbly. And so it gives you a crispier crust on your chicken.
I love cold leftover fried chicken. Does it actually stay crispy when, you know, it's been in the fridge overnight?
It does. It's not like, you know, not fresh out of the fryer, crispy, right? But yeah, it's still, but you don't know, but it's not soggy. It doesn't have that, like, you know, when stuff gets really like oily or, you know, laden or soggy, it still has a nice texture to it.
Yeah, I'll still eat it the soggy way, but it's better if it stays kind of crispy. Ashley, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Ashley Lecker, food blogger behind the site Cheese Curd in Paradise. She joined us for our Food Friday conversation today about summer picnics. We've got recipes from Ashley online at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you can still share your picnic favorites. Maybe if you've got one tonight on this lovely day in most of the state or over the weekend, you could take a picture of your picnic layout and then share it with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. You can go on the Ideas Network Facebook page. The will probably be easier, actually. The Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Love to see your picnic in progress. Coming on Monday on the morning show, follow the money in Wisconsin's primary elections. A lot of cash is flowing into campaigns. That's likely to increase in the general election. Find out who's putting money into the races for governor and U.S. Senate and the other lower ballot races as well. That's coming up Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. A small part of my pop culture upbringing might become real as soon as this weekend. The animated TV show The Jetsons told the story of a family in a science fiction future who lived similar lives to the Flintstones, but flying cars and meal pills instead of foot-powered cars and Brontosaurus burgers. It ran just one season. Its first run in the 1960s came back for new life in the 80s. The show took place apparently in the 2060s. Now, pop culture being what it is, some people tried to track down the birthday of the main character, George Jetson. People seem to agree it would be 2022, this year. There's some argument about the date, not a lot of evidence, but one top contender for George Jetson's birthday is July 31st, 2022. Yes, this Sunday, somewhere in this world, George Jetson could be born. A lot of people grew up with the Jetsons, bummed we don't have flying cars. I say, have you seen how people drive the non-flying kind? Get me off this crazy thing. This is Central Time.